Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan present Point Taken, a podcast connecting you to the sports and pop culture issues you care about and the guests you want to hear more from. Now, here's Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady.
Hey, everybody, what he said. Welcome to Point Taken, episode 11. Greg, you actually
counted
them.
How'd you know that?
Yeah, I know, I cheated. It's because you counted. I didn't do the research.
How lazy. We talked before. 10 has led to 11. Next week has the potential to be 12. Depends how it all goes. Depends how 11 finishes up here. I'll just note that. What's going on? How things changed?
Good.
How's your summer?
Summer's flying by, isn't it? It's pretty disappointing, actually.
Yeah.
It just flies. The weather hasn't been great.
It's been okay. We can't complain too much. It always seems longer when you're a kid. Summer's incredibly long when you're a child.
Yeah.
But so
forever.
Is the school year. Like, weeks fly by when you're a grown up and an adult.
That's true. In the summer, though, as a kid, I mean, you'd finish school and then you'd go back in September and you'd grow a few inches, you look completely different.
But yet it feels, the longest years of my life felt like between like about grade 3 and grade 6. You're not supposed to be that worldly when you're like between 8 and 12 years old.
Was there a time you sat there and thought,
yeah, when will this
really
year,
slowly?
When will I get away from this teacher? When will I stop sitting in this seat? When will I have a clean desk again? When will I not have this report card with C's on it hanging over my head?
Oh boy. See, okay. So now the issues come to light. See, I just find in the summer though, and it's nice working at night, and I'm sure for you during the working mornings, it's nice just to spend as much time outside as possible. I tried to get back into jogging this week, actually.
Okay.
And that lasted for about 15 minutes, and then my knee gave way.
Was there an incident? Like, were you cited on like a 680 News traffic report?
No.
In the middle of the street?
No,
downtown?
Not yet.
Not yet?
Yeah, I'm a little worried about that.
Traffic slowed on the DVP? You're not supposed to run up the DVP.
No?
Or even cycle
what
up
about
and down,
down the DVP? You can run.
And the 407, you have to pay to be on it, even if you're on
even
foot.
Even if you're jogging.
Even if you're on foot.
That's
so you,
to know.
But it's not serious. I saw you strut in here and you were in a hurry. And
yeah, I'm fine. I just can't run, apparently.
You were able to make up ground.
My body, it's given up on
but
me.
But you're not sensing major long-term...
It's fine. I'm being overly dramatic.
...life issues. Like
I'm just complaining.
Yeah. I've had a bad left knee. What was the way the doctor described it was, he said, you used to be skinny? And I'm like, you take that personally right away.
He didn't say that.
Well, this is when I'm 31. And I got like bigger, but yeah, like you're 166 pounds as a 20-year-old, and I'm like 5'11 and a half. But so I'm talking to him maybe being 195 pounds. So he's like, no, like you used to be really, like I said, yeah, I felt like I had chicken legs. And even though I played sports, was active, ate terribly, all that stuff conspired to skinny legs. And he said, here's what happened. The blood vessels in your legs and in your knees didn't grow at the same time your legs did.
Oh,
obviously.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so you don't get
no,
the proper amount
serious.
Of blood. So you basically clot. You have the opposite of a clot. You don't get enough blood to your, and that's why your knees start to hurt. And then you get loose cartilage. And then you stretch. I've never been a stretcher.
I regret asking. Oh, me neither. It's really bad.
Stretching is so boring.
It really is.
And now
and
they
it
have,
hurts.
They have classes for stretching, and there's hot yoga and cold yoga.
Hot yoga is actually really nice. You know what you should go to? One of the yin classes. It's yin yoga. That's where you hold stretches for a long time. It's not to build strength. It's to strengthen.
But does that work for – I find some of the yoga –
I've gone once.
Is it meant to be mental relaxation? Because I'm not
sometimes
a real –
Sometimes it is.
Do you know a meditating person? These people
I
who
don't.
Sit there in the dark or in quiet or with music for 15 minutes a day – they just think, because that's a nap to me. I just think during my nap and my commute.
I don't want to think. That's why I watch reality television.
Yeah. By the way, I know you're going to weigh in later on the Phelps shark show, which there may
it got a ton of viewers.
That bothers you immensely. I think it had more viewers than the Wimbledon men's and women's final.
Are
combined.
You suggesting I should meditate after this show?
No, I'm saying the shark versus Phelps still was closer. Than the Federer-Cilic final and Venus.
Why are you getting me upset?
Losing to Muguruza.
Okay, I get it.
They're both straight set
wasn't
matches.
Wasn't even a real shark.
Wasn't even real Cilic. In the
hey, that's a good one.
That's not...
I set you up for that one unintentionally. You're welcome.
So and we've got one of my best drink options is being taken off the menu, literally. in the next few weeks by a major billion-dollar corporation that thinks it knows better than the consumer once again.
Have you ever thought that this drink that is being... leaving has anything to do with any of your
my knee problems? I use them sometimes. I use cold ones to ice my knee sometimes.
Okay.
You're supposed to use. Have you ever seen? I don't know if women do this. I used to have roommates who we were an active group. I lived with two guys, one who played water polo on the varsity team at Western,
And
one who played football. But the football player, you'd come home. And he would ice his knees with like giant frozen bags of dinner.
Peas
like
in that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We used to do that growing up. Great scene. You've seen Bridesmaids where she gets the tattoo.
Yes.
Rebel Wilson, it's infected. And Kristen Wiig says, yeah, you might want to put some frozen peas on that. And then she's in the background just unloading the bag of loose peas.
But you're not supposed to open the bag.
No, exactly.
But I think sometimes, from time to time, and roommates do violate each other's privacy and stuff, if you will, sometimes the frozen bags he'd use weren't his. So you'd be like, why did I go to the grocery store? And spend $3 on a lovely chicken and vegetable dinner, and now they're on your bare, slightly hairy legs. Once you unfreeze something, I can't unsee that, and I can't unfreeze that.
Yeah,
or freeze
once
it back
something's
up.
Thawed, you shouldn't refreeze it.
Yeah. Why don't you guys talk about this during Sportsnet Central?
It's still a slow highlight period.
I feel like whether it's Eric or Carly or something, you could really dive deep into these. This is why you're here, so you don't have to do it on national television. Because opinions on frozen vegetables.
Because we don't have a producer here telling me, do not talk about that.
Move along. Yes. Stop the frozen vegetables.
Should we move along?
Unfreezing discussion. We can do such a thing. I'll share all my physical maladies except for my tiny, tiny blood vessels for another week. The Gold Cup final goes tonight between the United States and Jamaica. Canada didn't make it, but we lost to Jamaica in the quarterfinals. That's seen as somewhat progressive. And actually, the Jamaica match, I'm here to tell you, we didn't play as badly in as it sounded when we were down 2-0 very early in the second half. So an authority on that among all soccer matters. He started his Premier League career with the vaunted Ipswich Town back in 1985 and one of our great Canadian internationals, that's for sure. You can see him every weekend, Saturdays and Sundays, on our Premier League coverage, also with James Sharman and Danny Diccio. He is Craig Forrest. It's great for you to come on and join us. As we were saying earlier, shortest summer in the sporting business is the soccer summer, so we appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on. Yeah, I think, you know, it is a short summer for the players, definitely. Don't miss that, having a short summer, especially if you're playing international games. You know, we had the Confederation Cup, the Gold Cup for the North American and Caribbean players, Central American. So busy summer for the players and very short off season and right back into the mixer very shortly.
And I'll mention, your Premier League coverage starts in early August. I got August the 11th for the first match, Arsenal and Leicester City. Don't know if you've got that one or whether the other guys do, but the first big Saturday is August 12th. Now, you went first year without your partner in crime, Jerry Dobson. You had Danny Diccio and... we know James Sharman really. Did you sense James start to wear down the young lad around November, right around the Boxing Day matches? Was he able to have the stamina for a full season like you older folks do?
That's right. Well, we wondered if he would fit through it, you know, get through it and battle his way. But he seemed to do okay. He seemed to get through it. But stamina was good. I think he lost a couple pounds too during the season, so that's always nice.
There's no hazing or anything.
Pardon me?
There's no hazing.
No okay, hazing. We
good.
Don't do that.
Right,
in,
of course.
Sports,
no. Sorry. What am I talking about?
they felt bad enough for his accent and some of the other Charmin-esque inadequacies.
Oh boy.
So we've got the final tonight. I'm going to poke in on the final, so we'll be taping this as it goes. But USA Jamaica. The Jamaica loss was, Canada played very well in it. Maybe the two best chances Jamaica had to score, they did. But then incredibly heartening for the Jamaicans, who made the World Cup, the famous reggae boys in 98 in France, to beat Mexico. So what's your observation on the whole? Now, let's say the USA wins tonight, and people expect them to. What's your observation? Has Jamaica taken a step forward just alone with this tournament in CONCACAF? Though they're not in the hex, it's a step forward to beat a Mexican team in a best-on-best tournament.
Oh, absolutely. Jamaica's always... a tough team. They're always pretty disciplined for one of the island teams. They're strong physically. They have some technique as well. So it's good for them. And it's refreshing, I got to say, in the Gold Cup to have somebody other than Mexico and USA in the final. And we haven't seen anybody else win this Gold Cup when it started in 1991, other than Mexico and the United States and Canada that won off time in 2000. So it's nice to see somebody else. Obviously, for attendance, it's not great for the Gold Cup. They like to see the Mexicans there. But it would be nice if somebody else could win it. And they certainly have an opportunity. Mm-hmm. But the U.S. looked pretty strong, of course, and playing on home soil is going to be a pretty tough task, I think, for Jamaica. But Canada pushed them close. It just shows you how close it could have been and what an opportunity it was for Canada. If they had beaten Jamaica, I could see that they would have an opportunity to have beaten the Mexicans, too.
Were you surprised by how well Canada did?
I was surprised, yeah. Zambrano, the new coach, I think he must be pleasantly surprised with what he has, because when you look at the squad of players, I mean, the majority of them aren't playing regular football. There are some that are playing regularly, but not many. And I think he was very pleased the way they set up and some bright spots. You know, when you look at the young kid Davies, Alfonso Davies, 16 years of age, you know, a great story with him coming from a refugee camp where he was born and comes to Canada, and he's living the Canadian dream, if you like, because he's got a big upside and he could end up going right to the very top. He is that good.
And so we should mention September 2nd at BMO, it's a Jamaica-Canada against the first look at the new look in Toronto, at least, Canada team. And I saw them play Jamaica. I think, Craig, you might have been doing the TV for it. They played before they changed the turf, and I want to say in 08 when we were trying to qualify for 10. And that's I can recommend it. What a great atmosphere. I mean, it is Toronto. We have a pretty steady Jamaican population, and they were all there at BMO that night. So I know we want our Canadian crowds to be 80-20 or 90-10. That's a lot closer to 50-50. But that makes it feel like a big tournament atmosphere when Jamaica plays at BMO.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's a great experience again for the Canadian players. And, you know, I do wish that the World Cup qualifying was actually starting now for us and we're already out of this thing, because pretty exciting looking at this team, you know, some of the younger players. And, you know, like I said, they're not playing regularly for this, a lot of them with their teams, but, and we need that. But most of them being in their early 20s really bodes well for the future.
Do you still get stopped a lot just to talk about Gold Cup in 2000 and winning then and being MVP?
Yeah, you know, I do, actually. Even though it's, what, 17 years ago or so, we do. And the players, I was out last night with some of the players at a League One women's game, and Jason DeVos was there, and Di Rosario was there, and Jim Brennan was also there, and some of the women were there too. So it was really nice to see everybody. And obviously, in that environment, you're going to see soccer people, and they bring up the Gold Cup on a regular basis, which is very nice.
And as amazing as that was, I'd love to. I mean, I'm sitting there I think I just finished ninth grade when Canada goes and plays in the World Cup in '86. You're a young keeper coming up in the system, and your pro career has just started. It's a tricky thing. It's like those quarterbacks. Dan Marino famously said that he went to the Super Bowl his second year, and he thought, Joe Montana beat me, but there'll be more of these. And you just never know. Like, it's to fast forward, you know, 30 plus years and to think we haven't been back. My God, there must have been moments where you're a big part of it and you're like, this is the time. This is the, we were there almost, and you were there as a commentator almost with us in Honduras, needing just a draw to at least get to the hex and start talking seriously about it.
Yeah, there were so many close calls where really, when we go even back, I look thinking, qualifying for 1990 World Cup in Italy, the Mexicans were actually suspended, and there was only, you know, two and a half spots for CONCACAF at that time. But without the Mexicans in there, we had a great opportunity, and actually failed to get to in the pre-qualifying against Guatemala, of all things. So that was a really big miss straight after 1986. And then 1994, with the U.S. actually hosting the World Cup, there was only one and a half spots for CONCACAF. Let me think, you know, and then Mexico is in that, and we took them right to the wire and finished actually second, so we got the half spot. But it's not like the half spot today. Back then, it was, we had to play Australia home and away. If we beat them, we had to play Argentina and Maradona, and then if we beat them, we're at the World Cup. So it wasn't really a half spot at all. It was really only one. So tough. These days a little bit easier, and it's going to get easier again, because eventually we're going to go to 48 teams in the World Cup, which I don't really agree with from a quality standpoint, but certainly a great opportunity for Canada to qualify in the future. And then obviously in 2026, I think we're going to get some World Cup games.
Yeah, it's really tricky, isn't it? Because I went to France last year and was there a lot of the group stage, and the Euros had expanded, and everyone liked some certain stories. I was there when Ireland scored late against Italy, so that was crazy. They qualified beating Italy. Iceland was obviously an amazing story. And at the same time, you're going, we need the group stage to mean something. And those are such huge matches when we've had 24 World Cup teams or 32 World Cup teams. So if you're just playing two World Cup matches to eliminate 16 teams and send 32 on, if you have tickets for that, you may have some like literally dead rubbers because of the format.
Oh, absolutely. And when you hit the nail on the head, we saw that with the Euros. So they expanded from 16 teams to 24 teams. Portugal didn't win a game in the group stage. They finished third in the group. They get out of it. They end up going on, as we know, to win the tournament, and good for them. But certainly defensive football came into play. Most teams are going to go into those World Cups or Euros in these circumstances and play not to lose, not playing to win, because you can get through without losing games, even if you draw. So it doesn't bode well for a spectacle, in my opinion. But this is what FIFA wants, and obviously it's going to bring a lot more money to them, and that's what they're concerned about.
Just back to Canadian soccer, and especially on the men's side, why then are we seeing the success right now?
Well, that's a very good question, because I didn't really expect to see much at the Gold Cup, to be honest with you. But I think it's good coaching from Zambrano. He knows the players, or whether he got a little bit lucky with the formations and with the players that came in. He's got some very hungry players that want to achieve and still do well at the international game. We've got some players that didn't want to play for Canada one time, like Stephen Victoria was looking to play for Portugal. Junior Hoylett was sort of holding off, didn't play for Canada for an awful long time until it actually benefited him to try to get another club. So having players like that that are now playing for Canada, wanting to play, and then the addition of Scott Arfield, who was born in Scotland with his Canadian dad that was born here in Toronto. He is a regular player, and he is a Premier League player, and absolute quality. He has made everybody better, and I think he's a major factor as why this team has done well. So a good mixture, some experience, and some youth players and some young players that are very hungry and look as though they really want to play for Canada, and they don't have any fear like we've seen with Canadian teams in the past. They weren't. None of these players were part of that drubbing in Honduras a few years ago. So this is all brand new to them, and they're very excited, and they're playing like it.
Alfonso Davies, what do you see over the next few years? It's very difficult to tell. Nobody likes to bring up the specter of Freddie Adu, but we always have to be cautious with 15- and 16-year-old players. Alfonso, I've seen the interviews. He looks like he's got a great head on his shoulders. And at the same time, there will be some really tempting offers. He'll have to make a really important decision about where he wants to play. And I'd say it's great that he's in the MLS, and it's awesome. You're a BC guy. You know how great that would be if he could stay in that market and really connect with the fans of the Whitecaps, and at the same time, players want to play for big money in Europe and play in the Champions League and play in the Premier League, and that's going to be really tempting for them over the next few summers.
Wow, is it ever? It's a difficult one for him. Things are happening very, very quickly, and people are learning about him quickly. His learning curve is incredibly quick. He is. Got a good head on his shoulders. He's been dealt with very well at Vancouver, I feel. There'll be a lot of temptations. I think he's in a very good place right now, even if he spends the next couple of years in Vancouver under Carl Robinson, who is a good young player himself back in the day. So he will help out a lot, too, and be very honest with Alfonso Davies about what happens in the future. But the rest of it is up to him. He keeps playing well. The cream will rise to the top. And there'll be lots of clubs, big clubs, looking at him. And why wouldn't they be? Because that's what they do, looking for diamonds in the rough, and I think that Alfonso Davies certainly could be one of those. Do have to sort of curb the enthusiasm, obviously, like you talk about Freddie Adu. I mean, he was a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old that never really panned out, but certainly there's going to be temptations. There's going to be agents all over him and all over the family, so there's going to be a lot of pressures from outside coming in, and it'll be interesting to see how he deals with it. But like I said, he's in a very good place right now. And if down the road, if somebody wants to pick him up from Europe for money, well, then MLS in Vancouver wouldn't hesitate to sell him.
It's a decision you didn't have to fight with much, and you were good enough to play at the highest level in one of the best leagues, if not the best league. But 10 years later, it might have been a question. Tell me what you think the MLS has done, especially after it went through some rough bumps, some you know, growing stages in the first 5 or 6 years. Tell me what that's done for North American players with that option. We see the Landon Donovans and the other players say, I did Europe. I loved it. It was great. Now I'm here. It's not just this retirement home for some of the older European English players, but players at the peak of their power, the Michael Bradleys, and obviously now Josie Altidore, who was at Hull City before, they want to play in this league. And God knows it makes international play easier because they can get to their team faster to go where they need to go.
Yeah, we still have difficulties with Canadians. They've changed the rule. If you're developed through one of the major league soccer teams, you wouldn't play as a foreigner in the United States. But we still, for the most part, players that are Canadian want to play in major league soccer. Say you go to Europe and you want to come back, you will play as a foreign player in the United States in a league that Canada have three teams, which is really unfair. But at least they moved a little bit as far as developing, and that the players could play as non-foreigners like Alphonso Davies if he moved to the United States. But if he goes to Europe and comes back, he would then play as a foreigner in the United States. So that makes things really difficult because you take up one of the few foreign spots. The ones with the Bradley and the Altidores and the Donovans are a little different because they came back for big money.
Yeah.
Like more money than he was making, Bradley, than he was making in Roma and Italy. So from that standpoint, not an issue. Will that opportunity come to an Alphonso Davies or, you know, a Junior Hoylett or, you know, these Piets? Or, you know, I'm not sure that's going to happen for Canadian players at the same level. We hope so, but certainly MLS isn't as much of a, you know, a going out to pasture type league. But we have still seen all of that. But we've proven, I think, in Toronto that the best way to go about these designated players is to maybe overpay for them, but get players in their prime, in their mid-20s, in their late-20s, before they get too old. Because when you look at some of the other teams, even when they bring in a Lampard that was a legendary player at his best, he was past it at New York, right? So
yeah.
Villa's done pretty well in New York, but they've gone for a model that are trying to bring fans in because of these legendary players. We're trying to see or think, well, we're bringing good players in their prime and try and win something. And that philosophy has worked very well for Toronto FC.
Do you think it's a bit easier, too, to get some of these top players, money aside, just because though the league has built up and it is more exciting now than it used to be in terms of a fan base? Because, I mean, it's so different than playing overseas.
Yeah, it is. But the league has definitely improved from the first, you know, 5 years that we were watching it and sort of covered it really heavily. The quality is improving. It's still got a ways to go, but it's and I think they've managed the league very well as opposed to the old North American Soccer League where it was a wild, wild west and everybody were just going crazy, and then they finally figured out that they're losing lots of money. So the budgets and the way they deal with North American soccer these days is very well run. Catch-22, you know, do you put a good quality on the field first to bring the fans in, or do you try to get the fans in and then bring the quality? And they sort of balance that pretty well, and for the most part, they're massively successful with it. So it'll keep improving too, and you'll see more players. I know I talked to players over in England and they played in that real high pressure environment, and they would love to come to Major League Soccer because it's a pretty comfortable place to play without having to walk around the supermarket and get yelled at.
Well, we had Josie on earlier this spring, and he talked about the heat that you feel when you're playing in relegation type matches, and you guys comment on these, and at halftime it oozes through the television, the stress of the fans, like millions and tens of millions of dollars at stake, and wages, and everybody who goes down to the championship knows their entire fate changes in over the next summer coming.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the most exciting parts about the Premier League is obviously no playoffs, but when it gets down to it and you look at what happens at the bottom of the table and the promotion relegation system that we don't have in North America, but adds to a ton of excitement because it is so crippling for teams, or potentially could be if they get relegated, because they lose this massive TV deal. They do get a parachute payment, but it's not even anywhere close. That runs out after 3 years, and the leagues below, the the second division, which is the championship, and the third tier of English football are littered with teams that have been in the Premier League before. So it's a difficult place to get to, and even tougher to get back at times. And then, like I say, crippling. Ipswich went into liquidation a few years ago after they finished fifth in the Premier League 1 year, gave long-term contracts to all the players because they thought this would keep them in the Premier League for the next 4 or 5 years, at least this squad. They got relegated the next year. So now you're stuck with multi-million dollar contracts, no TV money, trying to offload these players off the cheap. Went into liquidation. You look at teams like Leeds United, the same thing.
Yeah.
They spent overspend. They still haven't got back to the Premier League. So it's a really, really exciting part of the Premier League and all divisions with the relegation promotion system.
I got to see the only match I ever saw at, not Anfield, but at Highbury was Leeds beating Arsenal 2-1 on a Monday night, and they'd just come off the Champions League. Lee Boyer got in a fight with Patrick Vieira, so that was great. They both got sent off. And but that was the Aussie guys, right? Harry Kewell, Mark Viduka, and you're like, things couldn't have been better for their supporters. And 2 years later, it's all over. And they've been waiting, like you said, 15 years. It may never happen again. It literally may never happen again.
Exactly. They spent so heavily to make sure they finish in the top four to get into the Champions League, which gets them another, what, $100 million a year. And they failed to do so. And it wasn't even getting relegated that year. It was not finishing in the Champions League that really crushed them, and overspent, bad management. You got to be careful. And you look at the teams that come up, like a Huddersfield. They've never been there before. They come up this year. They've already spent in the region of $70 million on some players to try to stay in the Premier League, because more than likely they would be relegated. But it's tough. You have to work on a small budget. Burnley do a great job. They don't overspend, so they're in good position if they do get relegated, because they haven't overspent and they just try to claw their way in there every single year. So different teams manage their money differently, and some do it well and some don't.
Well, we'll take just a few more minutes with you. It's been great getting into all this detail. Tell me about, it's season 11 for Toronto FC, and obviously a massive breakthrough last year. My kid plays goal at age 9. He still talks about going to the Montreal game. It's one of the greatest sporting events I've ever been to, ever, last fall. And so in its 11th season, we saw all this huge progress, and they built up the year before. There must have been nights, Craig, in the first, 8 years where you'd leave after comment, or you'd leave after just being at a game, or somebody would come up to you and you just are like, oh my God, like, this could not be going worse. It couldn't have gone worse for the first 8 years in this city.
Oh, I think me and Jerry were doing games. I think we won 5 of the first 55 games in the call, something like that. Yeah, it was painful. But, you know, I mean, the ownership where it got into a sport that they didn't know an awful lot about, and they tried to do their best. They made some poor decisions. I think they would admit that moving forward. But, you know, you see that a lot with new franchises. And they finally got their act together and brought in some good people and spent really wisely. They do have the biggest wage bill in Major League Soccer, so you would expect that they should do fairly well. And those three designated players, Giovinco is lights out good, been the best designated player, I think, in history of the MLS, just because of what he brings every single week. And he's doing really, really well. Bradley, Altidore. It's exciting. Now, I think they're the best team in the league, but again, it's not done like European football, where if you're the top of the tree, you win. You go into a playoff system, which you don't really have a benefit. It's home and away, so there's not really a home field advantage as such. And teams that come in with momentum, playing well, they can win in the first round. You see teams at the very top losing first rounds of playoffs all the time. It becomes a bit of a crapshoot, but I do believe they're the best team in the league and would hope to at least challenge for sure for the title again this year.
Yeah, hopefully. Fans deserve it after all those years of struggles.
Do they ever.
Okay, so with you going back to work after a short break beginning of next month, it's hard to in just a couple minutes, but what do you expect this year in the Premier League?
Well, I mean, there's been a ton of movement in this window, this transfer window. In fact, they're going to probably crush the record of $1.2 billion spent on players alone. Not wages, just players.
Yeah.
Movement. So there's a ton going on at Manchester City. Manchester United have spent a lot of money. Chelsea have done the same. Newcastle are back in the Premier League. They've spent some money to strengthen their squad. So there's some terrific players coming in. Bernardo Silva from Monaco has gone to Man City. Mendy's gone to Man City for some £52 million. Danilo Some really big moves. Chelsea got Alvaro Morata from Real Madrid. He's going to be exciting, and he's going to be new from that standpoint too. And some wonderful players coming in that we haven't seen in the league, and some big movements and some surprises from some teams as well. Tottenham haven't spent anything, but I think their managers are still looking for a few near the end of the transfer window. So the same customers will be up top there. I think, you know, Man City, Chelsea again, but Chelsea are going to have a little bit more difficult this year because they didn't have European football last year. It was a cruise. So all they have to do is deal with Premier League games, all 38 matches. When you look at the likes of Liverpool and Manchester United, Man City, those guys are playing around 60 games. So it's going to be a different animal for Chelsea this time around in Conte, but it'll be interesting to see who comes out of the top. I mean, Mourinho's already said that it's going to be a different ballgame because of these different challenges for the top team. So it'll be interesting, as usual, at the top of the season. It'll be,
and it feels it pulls it off. The irony there is, like, Man United may be back. A lot of people have them third, maybe flirting. They're not spending what City and Chelsea are. But the irony is no Wayne Rooney. How weird will it be to see Wayne Rooney in an Everton kit during some of the matches this year?
It will be. And I think, you know, he has to be somewhat excited, too. I mean, going back to his roots, if you like, you know, Everton now under new ownership. They got a good manager there with Ronald Koeman. They've spent really big for Everton this summer. They're at about £92 million and bought four very, very strong players, but they also lost Lukaku. But they're looking to challenge for the top six, and that's what they'll expect this year. So it will be interesting with Wayne Rooney to be into a team that I think is pretty strong, Everton, this season. And again, looking the other way, when Lukaku goes to Manchester United for what, £72 million, it's a ridiculous price tag for that player. Excellent player, but I mean, $72 million, that's a little high for me, I'd say. But that's what that's what we're dealing with. And at the end, Manchester United might end up spending nearly $200 million because they got Lindelof for $30 million, and they're looking at Perisic and maybe possibly Matic as well. So
I got into the wrong business. I should have become a professional male football player.
Or an agent.
Oh, an agent. There we go. That's a bit more realistic.
You don't have to
take thanks, Craig.
Lots of money.
True.
A lot less knee ligament damage for
the
agents.
Don't even have to take a high commission either.
No.
Okay,
not,
I'm on
not
it.
At $72 million. You'd take 10% of that.
Sure.
she'll be contacting Alfonso Davies to handle him for the next decade and a half of commissions.
She'd be one of very many, because you're going to expect that Alfonso Davies is going to have his phone ringing off the wall. His parents won't know what's going on.
Should buy an idiot's guide to finance before I reach out.
That would work. Yes. Well, we loved having you on. You've been such a great ambassador for the sport for all across the country. And of course, we can't wait to see you, Danny, James, on all the matches beginning in early August. Enjoy the rest of the time, and thanks for doing this for us today. I know folks are going to really enjoy the depth we went into today.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Craig.
Totally. Thanks, Craig.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
See ya.
That was a lot of ground covered by Craig Forrest. We appreciate his time. Like we said, Premier League coverage gets going in a couple weeks on Sportsnet. And I know you don't get many evenings off, but I'm telling you, that Canada-Jamaica game would be like a party with soccer balls and throw-ins and kicking.
Yes.
And grass stains on at BMO Field in early September. You should find. I know they won't just give you a night off in September. You're working all the nights lately, but still, consider that.
Maybe I should pencil it in.
Yeah,
I will consider it.
Yeah.
Should we do my favorite segment?
There's no way to wrap up episode 11. Then we don't have 11 stories for what's.
I mean, let's not push it.
That seems like it would be.
It's time for What Up With That.
Not bad. Sponsored by anybody who wants to sponsor it.
Yes,
at this point,
please call us, text us. Well, don't text us. We're not giving out our numbers. Email us. Do whatever you have to do.
No, you don't have a possibility of doing that. I've known people before give out their cell phone number on the air by accident. And
do you do that by accident?
Because when someone says, "What's your cell number?" I'm like, I have to think about it for a sec, because now everything is just names. Names.
Well, we don't need to share that. Okay, so I was actually looking forward to, as ridiculous as it is, this Michael Phelps versus shark race, right? Because they were hyping it up and the commercials were over the top. And I thought, well, logistically, how's this going to work? Is there going to be some sort of water fence between them and they're going to legitimately race?
Like a steel water fence. A shark might over like an actual pool lane I can swim under. At the Lifetime Fitness, I do that. I swim under the little lane thing.
It was simulated.
What
I get it, and the shark won, but I mean, what's the point? It was very underwhelming. I mean, safety first, but hype it up.
Don't you think, though?
Hype it up as a simulated race.
Had they raced, had they found a great white shark? Now,
it would have been a mess. It would have been
Well, PETA gets involved in everything.
Logistically a mess.
PETA gets involved in everything, and I'll just say that had they captured a shark, somehow trained it to race, and then laid him out in a steel 100-meter course with steel barriers, there might be protests and or lawsuits and or criminal charges. Because I believe it's like, is a great white shark not an endangered species? I think it might be.
I didn't do my research.
I know it's not a bald eagle, but racing a bald eagle would be more difficult. But
the whole thing was ridiculous and stupid.
Didn't
and
you kind of giggle when they put up the country that the shark was from? Like,
no,
the
I didn't
great white.
See that.
You did. The great white's from South Africa. And they raced a hammerhead and a nurse shark. He beat one of the shark
varieties.
And he had
that fin on. He had that kind of mermaid fin on.
Which I think they should sell.
I would love to swim on that.
Retail-wise, yes. People would get in their own pools.
Can you imagine? Little pool that I swim in to do lengths. I'd be at one end in 0.2 seconds.
Kind of like a unifin. And as he said, he had a suit that was a millimeter of thickness. So you're not... any kind of, you know, foibles I have or any kind of, what would I say, extra skin would show through that one millimeter. Like a 1 millimeter suit isn't exactly like how most people prefer thick, baggy swim trunks on men. It's not the Speedo. Nobody wants that, and nobody's asking for that.
He also wouldn't have been swimming his fastest either. I mean, we're coming up a year removed from the Olympics. He's not in swimming shape.
I would say it's a great... I liked it from it. It kept my attention. I know there was some disappointment, and there was really no danger involved. The only danger, did you see the guy riding on the pedal bike?
Cheated. I just watched it on Twitter.
Okay, so he had the pedal bike, and how they were testing to see how fast the shark could go in the timing. The guy on the pedal bike was in a lot more risk. Like, he really wasn't strapped in, and he could have fallen off the bike. He had no wetsuit on, and there was a shark chasing like a bloody tuna or something. He has to be like the sort of rabbit in the race that the greyhounds chase.
Yeah.
For them to figure out the 100 meters. It was very scientific. And I'm not much of a science guy. I'm not. I should know more about science than I do. But I loved the, I thought it was just well shot. And I didn't think Phelps came off kind of corny. Like, Ben Johnson raced a horse. Not just Michael Johnson raced Donovan Bailey. I mean, there's some corny made-for-TV events.
This was a corny made-for-TV event.
I didn't think Phelps came off
he
badly.
He raced a shark, simulated.
And he wants a rematch.
Sorry for getting upset.
In warmer temperatures, because don't doubt the water was like, it was like 40. You know how you get in a pool and you're like, it's too cold? It was like 50. We won't go in a pool that's 70.
Speak for yourself.
70's too cold, depending on the circumstances. Beverage news. I'm really upset about this.
Oh, yes,
this
you are.
This is the definitive. This isn't even. This is like a half first world problem. Coke has decided to make a move on Coke Zero, as in not make it anymore. No one consulted me, and I'm one of the notable consumers of Coke Zero. So they're going to end up making something brand new. Now, I was around for the whole 1985 new Coke debacle. You probably don't really remember
I don't drink Coke. Or is that when they changed the recipe?
Well, yes. So they said,
I don't drink
no
it.
More Coke. Here's new Coke. And you couldn't get a better guy. And back then, they got Bill Cosby to promote it. And really, now, you couldn't do that. So this was 1985 when The Cosby Show was the number one show on television, and Cosby was this... Exactly. So they're going to make now, and then they got rid of New Coke, and they said, oh, okay, this didn't work. Here's Coca-Cola Classic. And that's what it was called for a long time. It was like, you'd be like, what drinks do you have? Well, we have New Coke, Coke Classic, Orange Pop, Fanta, Sprite, whatever. So they're going to make Coke Zero Sugar. So you're telling me this has huge impact on my life and none on yours? Nothing?
I don't drink Coke, Pepsi. I don't like the taste of any of them.
You don't like soda?
No.
What do you order when you... Okay.
Water?
So besides... Okay, yeah. No...
You know what's weird? And my friends and coworkers make fun of me. I actually enjoy drinking milk.
I like milk, too. I like a cold glass of milk.
Well, sometimes, yeah.
An almond milk in a smoothie.
Oh, I do that every day.
Best.
But I either drink water, alcohol, or milk.
It's a very fitness conscious show. But that said, I can indulge and.
But you'll be fine. Don't worry about it. A lot of sparkling water.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah, you have a massive bottle of sparkling water.
Now this new drink will have zero sugar and zero calories. But the Coke Zero had more sugar in it, so people are looking for less sugar, but also with the caffeine hit that a Coke Zero, like there's just magic. Magic inside it.
See, or have what I'm having, a latte, which is milk and coffee.
I'm gonna miss Coke Zero, so okay. I'm gonna buy it. I'm gonna buy a truckload of it in the next week before
that
they clear
like a silly
it
investment.
Off the shelves. I'll pay full dollar. We used to have mercenaries at camp. You couldn't get your own drinks at camp. So when I was in a cabin, these guys went into town who had a driver's license, who had a car, and they went in and they bought soda. And so they'd buy like four cases of pop and they'd sell the soda to like 9-year-old kids for like a dollar a can when they were probably paying like 38 cents.
Wow.
That's entrepreneurial. But it's also like pop scalping instead of ticket scalping.
Well, at least they were selling soda water.
It's inventive. No, they were selling pop.
Oh, sorry.
Sugar to young. Impressionable. Now I was like 14, but I'm like, yeah, give me three of those cans. I got to get through the day.
I'll pay a triple.
What else on What Up With That?
So it's coming up to the 20-year anniversary of Titanic, the movie with young Leo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet. And so for charity, they're auctioning off dinner in New York later this year with Leo and Kate. And my question is, who would you pay to have dinner with?
Leo's pretty up there. I think
it'd be great.
Kind of fascinating.
And they get along, right? They're very close, so that would automatically make the dinner more comfortable.
I mean, you'd get me stuck on those John Hughes people, like Rob Lowe and Anthony Michael Hall.
I would love to I'd love to have dinner with, if I think of celebrities like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. Can you imagine?
Oh
how
no,
fun that
would be amazing.
Yeah,
that would be wonderful too.
The Obamas.
The Obamas, okay. You'd pay not to eat probably with... I know the people you'd not eat, but you would pay not to eat with Donald
Actually,
Trump and Melania.
That's a better question.
You do not want to eat with LeVar Ball. I know that.
No, I get very angry.
Even a fast food meal, you would not eat with the Ball family.
No.
Yeah, so you got your targets
That's
out there.
That's good. That's a better question. Who would you not eat with?
How much time
do we have?
Many fellow staff members of Sportsnet 590 The Fan. They'd have to agree to eat with me first. Thanks to Craig Forrest. Like I said, you're a week away from going to Montreal, but next week we'll preview the Rogers Cup. We'll talk about the baseball trade deadline.
Yeah, talk about some tennis, hopefully, leading up to Rogers Cup.
Maybe Kyrie Irving will have a new team next week.
Oh, my goodness.
That
Don't get
happen.
Me started on that guy.
The drama. Oh, I agree with you. He's making a terrible, terrible mistake. I really do believe that. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, check us out on iTunes and rate us there.
Yes.
We're a really good Uber driver.
Yeah.
Or set of drivers. If we were both in the front seat, I don't think people would get in the car.
No.
You're not supposed to see two people in the car. By the way, it's not anything apropos of that. Somebody videoed, there was an Uber driver who just took his girlfriend along. Do you know about this story? And the person's like, this is not appropriate. You're like making out while trying to get me to my destination. I've seen weird things in cars.
Well, this is something I saw yesterday. And then the Uber driver apparently at the end said, can you please still give me a good rating?
For my makeout skills?
Well.
2.5 out of 5. We'll see everybody next week.
Bye.
You've been listening to Point Taken with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady on sportsnet.ca/590.